He was publicly slated for allegedly cutting thousands of jobs in companies he took over, but now he says he'll create 12 million of them over 4 years. But first he has to secure his own one, President of the United States. Mitt Romney is ahead in the polls, so can he win? And if he does, what is that likely to mean for the rest of the world? It was probably the most expensive legal action in history, costing upwards of $160 million when two Russian oligarchs clashed in court. Julian Assange thinks he may have to spend a year locked inside the Ecuadorian embassy in London. And locked in a different way, is the regular occupier of this seat. All this and much, much more to come in The Real Deal. Welcome to The Real Deal. I'm Yvonne Ridley, standing in for George Galloway. Shooting from the lip and shooting from the hip, just like him. You can shoot back at the address shown on the screen now. If you were wondering just what George Galloway was up to in this rather wonderful costume we saw in the introduction, well, wonder no longer. He's on the line now from Jakarta, Indonesia. George, welcome to The Real Deal. The viewers have seen a picture of you, not in your usual Savile Row suits, but what's the story?
Well, it was the Indonesian leg of my wedding. And so, of course, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. And I had to wear the Javanese costume, and rather fine costume it is. It's a very wonderful civilization, this. Too few people know about it. It's one of my goals now is to promote Indonesia because it's such a wonderful place, and everyone watching it should think about holidaying here. If Malaysia is truly Asia, then this is a surprise here. This is Asia that's not been seen before, and people should do it. Well, not least for the reasons that you mentioned, that the costumes are simply wonderful, but not as wonderful as the food.
What was the ceremony like? Was it how different was it?
Well, there was no ceremony, really. It was a reception for the bride's family in overwhelming number, but also local politicians from different parties, senior journalists. My wife's father is a distinguished journalist for a very long time in the Netherlands, writing for the Indonesian media, but also activists in campaigns and so on. My wife is an activist for global justice, and many of her friends from different campaigns that she's been involved in were there. So it was altogether a wonderful occasion. I'm grateful to those who hosted it and to all that came to it and all those that saw it on Twitter and Facebook and sent their good wishes.
Yes, well, you mentioned that your wife's an activist. I know that that goes to the very heart of your constituency and in Bradford, and later this month, both you and I will be sharing a platform there with Imran Khan, the Pakistan politician and well-known cricketer, former cricketer, and you'll be campaigning about the US drones. Are you going to sort of link up Bradford with any part of Indonesia?
Yes, one of my purposes on the way here in Dubai, in the Persian Gulf, and here in Indonesia is to encourage people to come to Bradford. I can reveal to you that we have invited Miss Entrepreneur Indonesia 2012 to come to Bradford to speak to young entrepreneurs in Bradford, of whom there are many, to promote the city's many assets, some of which can be bought much cheaper than their real value because of the parlous economic situation in the city. And we're encouraging people to come to the city and invest and employ people. So that's indeed one of my purposes. One of the things that I did when I was in Dubai was talk to some very important and powerful people about just those things. And we intend to promote the wonders of Bradford and West Yorkshire here in the Far East, because if there is globalization going on, well, we might as well get a part of it. But one of the things that you just mentioned that we have absolute obligation to do is raise our voices and our hands, as we're free to do and commanded to do, to oppose the murder on a mass scale which is taking place in Pakistan. And nobody in the country and few in the world have done as much on these matters as you. On this, I'm playing catch-up with you, and it's good that you're sharing the platform with me and with Imran Khan on the drone attacks, which are laying waste not just now in Afghanistan, but across the border in Pakistan, where the war has undoubtedly spread. And that's exactly what we predicted when it started. And it's now all but unstoppable, I think.
Yes, I mean, you mentioned before about the corporate links or the commercial links that you want to bring with Bradford and Indonesia. What about political links? How politically active are people in Indonesia to global issues?
Well, not as many as one would like. It is the fourth biggest country in the world, more than 250 million people. More than 200 million of those are Muslims. Therefore, it's the biggest individual Muslim country in the world. And it has so vast an archipelago in which it itself exists, and it's so far from many of the places that we are talking about here, that it's understandable that people largely concentrate on their own issues. But one of the things that my wife has always been doing, and I'm now trying to help her in that, is to encourage a belief here amongst the masses in Indonesia that they are part of one world, that they are part of one world struggle for justice and hak. And that's the reason why we helped set up Viva Palestina Indonesia, who've now got a very fine website and a very fine network of people now across many parts of this great, huge country, but also other matters, environmental matters, principally, where the Indonesian activists are actually way in advance of many others. So we can learn from them, they can learn from us. We'll be stronger if they're on the field with us, and they'll be stronger in their own country if they feel they're part of an international movement of like-minded citizens.
Well, thanks very much, George, and I look forward to meeting Mrs. Galloway in Bradford for that rally against US drones in mid-September. Of course, God you'll
willing.
Be taking over this chair again next week, and I know your followers will be looking forward to your return. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Yvonne. Thanks for standing in.
Okay, you're welcome.
To everyone at The Real Deal. Thanks.
Thanks. Two of the world's most richest men have been in a rather interesting legal fight in the London law courts over the past few months. And of course, I'm talking about the exiled oligarch Boris Berezovsky and protagonist Roman Abramovich. They're both worth mega millions. Berezovsky was suing his younger oligarch for almost $5 billion, alleging that Abramovich, who owns Chelsea Football Club, had intimidated him into selling shares in the Russian oil giant Sibneft for much less than they were worth. However, it sometimes seemed as much more of an attempt to embarrass the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, as to hold his former business partner to account. Berezovsky had been the ultimate political godfather in Russian politics and was instrumental in helping Putin to power before the president spurned him. Boris then fled to exile in London. Abramovich, by contrast, voluntarily made London his home and bought Chelsea Football Club. They're a sort of poor person's Newcastle United, which is my team, and has spent hundreds of millions on players to win league championships and, last season, the Champions League. Berezovsky will now have to foot both parties' legal bills, estimated to be around a whopping $160 million. So a nice payday for the lawyers. And you could buy a world-class striker or two for that. The Julian Assange saga drags on. He's still holed up in the Ecuador embassy in London, where they had to install a blow-up mattress and a larger fridge to accommodate him. He's wanted by Sweden to answer allegations of sexual assaults, but if you've read the stuff on the internet, you'll already know that he has been questioned by police in Sweden and denied the claims. He thinks it's all a ploy to have him extradited to Sweden and then to the US to face treason charges over his involvement in the whistleblowing site WikiLeaks. And I don't really think there's much doubt about that. I mentioned earlier that having finally won the Republican nomination for president, the real fight for the top job begins now for Mitt Romney. At the beginning of this month, he had a campaigning war chest of $177 million, but that has increased since his installation as the official candidate, probably by several millions. The bulk of the money will be spent on TV ads, no doubt slagging off Barack Obama, and they will be created by the spinmeisters inside the campaign, dubbed Mitt's Mad Men. You may think that's a reference to the television show. I prefer to take it literally. The slogan of Bill Clinton's campaign was, "It's the economy, stupid." This one will be jobs, jobs, jobs. Romney is pledging to create 12 million of them over 4 years, although he hasn't yet said how. The low point of the Republic convention was surely the sight of a crazy old guy growling at an empty chair. It was either the former star and movie director Clint Eastwood or a very bad impersonator. Romney and the Republicans came out of the anointing convention apparently 4 points in the polls above Obama. But with the Democrats convening this week, that could all change. With me is Charlie Wolfe, wearing his Republicans commentary hat. Welcome again to The Real Deal, Charlie. So apart from economic isolation for Russia, the execution of Julian Assange, the banning of abortion and a war with Iran. What else can we expect from a Romney presidency?
Which convention were you watching? I think you may have had the wrong channel there.
Well, he had a whole list, didn't he? Well, he had a dig at the Cubans. He slapped the Russians around.
The interesting thing about the foreign policy, because this will be fought on the economy, the deficit, and jobs, jobs, jobs. You're very right there. But you know, it was interesting. It won't be fought on foreign policy, but they did an analysis of the amount of tweets going on by Twitter. And when he mentioned Putin and saying, "I won't be flexible, I'm going to have a bit of backbone," the Twitter traffic spiked. I think it was 13,000 tweets a minute.
But is that really responsible? I mean, do we want all this war talk from...
Well, it wasn't war talk. What it was, though, was saying...
Well, he was having a good dig at Putin.
Well, maybe it was a bit of a dig, but what it was showing that it goes back to the theory of American exceptionalism and saying we stand for something. It's Condi Rice, I think, if you want to understand American exceptionalism and also projection of power and probably a lot of his thinking on foreign policy. Her speech, I think, summed a lot of it up of saying, you know, the world needs to know where does America stand. We've always been known for that, and that's kept a lot of stability in the world.
What's she hoping to gain from this?
I don't think she's hoping. Funny enough, I don't think she's going to gain anything. Condi Rice is adored by the party. As a Secretary of State, she was okay. I wouldn't say she was perfect, but she's adored by the party. As a human being, you can't, as a woman and a human being, you cannot help but salute her for what she's accomplished. You know, coming from Jim Crow, America.
I find some difficulty. But
well, like I said, you don't have to agree with her policies necessarily. But you know, she came from Jim Crow America, and overcame. Her parents you know, worked to grow her into someone who is a concert pianist, I think she studied ballet, a very, you know, well-respected academic. She's accomplished quite a lot.
She's fluent in Russian.
Yeah, fluent in Russian.
But of course, if your man Romney gets in, I mean, there's not going to be much jaw with Russia the way he was.
No, I think there will be, but we're going to go back to a Reagan principle of peace through strength. What was very upsetting to a lot of Americans and very telling on a whole number of issues was when there was that meeting. I can't remember what it was when Barack Obama was sitting there with Mr. Medvedev. And leaned forward and said, you know, tell Mr. Putin after the election I can be flexible because I don't have another election. And people are saying, wait a minute, what is he planning on doing here? That was very worrying. You know, and this is from a president who seems to forget about the Constitution and decides to take his own run at things. The Dream Act, immigration being a great one. Most Republicans actually agree with him on saying young people who were brought into the country should have a way in. You know, there are exceptions, even with the toughest of immigration, but to sit there and just say, I'm not going to enforce the law, I'm just going to on my own by presidential fiat.
Getting back to Romney, you know, he had this dig at the Russian leadership. He then had a prod at the Chinese. You know, the Chinese have loaned America $3 trillion. Surely you don't bite the hand that feeds you.
I don't think we have to worry about biting the hand that feeds us because the Chinese are going to want their money. But also it has to be said, and here's an area where whatever you think of Donald Trump, he was very right on target in the early days of the election. The way China has been manipulating their currency has been highly unfair, and it's time it was addressed.
But
maintain.
You're not in a position to say that. Owe $3 trillion, no, not you personally.
I think Mr. Romney's going to get the deficit down. And also, you can be strong. We don't, you know, have to apologize for who we are. I think a president's job is to talk tough and to, you know, negotiate.
And
this is what
about,
Romney has done
what about
for his
Iran?
Life.
He was sneering over Obama's opening speech as president when he did say that he wanted to talk to Iran. Obviously, it's not something he's followed up at all in his presidency. But Romney just sneered at the suggestion of any dialogue with
Iran.
Well,
it's not because of no dialogue. We've had tons of dialogue, and it hasn't got us anywhere. I don't think we're respected with Iran. Iran and a lot of people
in
the world.
Well, because you keep accusing them of having nuclear weapons.
Not for that reason. Mr. Obama is not believed on the world stage. One of the best deterrents
believed
of
by
war.
Who as people or as
no,
a,
I believe believed by our
scene.
Both our allies and our enemies. Mm-hmm. One of the best deterrents of the use of force is the convincing projection of force to say, if you don't do some X, Y, or Z, then we will put all options on the table. And Mr. Obama says all options are on the table. No one believes him. And with respect, I think the Iranians have been having him for a ride. They've been jaw-jawing, not because they want to work out a diplomatic solution or want peace, but because they want the centrifuges to continue to spin. Now, again, talking...
Well, is that so bad? You know, they're developing nuclear energy.
They're not. I think it's pretty plain to see the rate there.
But even the CIA said
the IAEA says they're moving forward with a nuclear arms program. It's pretty plain to see when you look at them burying stuff in bunkers, and to the degree that they're purifying uranium, I think we all know where it's going. And we've had a lot of jaw from Catherine Ashton and the EU, the P5+1. And it's just been stalling. It's not got us anywhere. So I think we need a little bit of a tougher...
But this drive to isolate Iran hasn't got you anywhere either. You know, they've just hosted an international conference.
I agree. You know,
leaders from all over the world going.
This is showing why none of this stuff that the president and the Europeans, to be fair, are doing is really having any work. We're supposedly isolating Iran.
But say this isn't going to impact on the American voters.
I'm sorry?
Well, in terms of foreign policy.
Foreign policy should, but most elections, especially in America, but I'd say elsewhere, will be about the economy. This is why, for instance, I don't think the Democrats are going to have much of an improvement next week. Well, for a couple reasons. One, when Romney got up, he's new. Even though he's been around for 8 years campaigning, a large majority of people would have still never seen him or heard him. This was his time to introduce himself. So it's more probable that the Republicans would have got a bounce out of this. Whereas next week, when the president stands up, well, we've heard him for 3 years. What is he going to get up and say that's all that new? The other thing, though, that I think will hurt the Democrats next week is it sounds like they're playing a lot of what we call small ball. For instance, he's made a big thing out of this supposed war on women. So he's having the president of the NARAL, which is an abortion rights group, Planned Parenthood, Sandra Fluke, who you've probably heard, who's the Georgetown law student that wants the government to pay for her contraception. That's really narrow, pushing to victim groups. He's trying to basically up his base, whereas...
But, you know, the Republicans are not women-friendly, let's face it.
Oh, I disagree. When you look, again, when you look at Condoleezza Rice and what she's achieved as the first female Secretary of State, the first black Secretary of State, when you look at Mia Love, who's a Mormon convert in just outside Salt Lake, a mayor running for Congress, who gave a fantastic speech. When you look at Susana Martinez, the first Hispanic governor, female Hispanic governor of a state of New Mexico, and all of these people, there was a narrative.
The trouble is, though, with these women, they try and out men the men, if that makes sense. You know, very much Margaret Thatcher. She did nothing for women politically.
But what they show is what you can do for yourself. The story for not just the women, but you know, Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, even Mr. Romney. All of these people actually had relatively humble beginnings. Even Mr. Romney.
You're saying it's about, you know, what you can do for yourself, but isn't this the trouble with the Republicans? They're encouraging this very sort of self
No, culture. No, I think you misunderstand. And this is, again, where Romney's faith comes in, and I think will play very well. Mormon culture, Mormon theology, talks a lot about service to other men. To be in service of others is to be in service of Christ. And by being able to take care of one's own welfare, by being successful. I mean, the more, you know, as Jesus said, teach a man, give him a fish, he eats for a day, teach him to fish. That's what they put.
Well, let's cut straight to the chase because we're running out of time now, Charlie. Where are these 4 million jobs?
12 million.
Sorry, 12 million. Oh, yeah, he's going to do it in 4 years. Where are these 12 million jobs
coming
from?
Well, the first one he talked about is energy independence. Energy independence. When you look at what's going on in North Dakota, where on state property and private lands, they've been pushing for shale. That's a boom town. They're paying $20 an hour to work in McDonald's. That's how well people are, you know, you can't get in enough people into that state. He's going to start opening that up. He's going to reform tax structures, which is going to, you know, people right now are very nervous. Corporations and small businesses, they're scared to hire. They don't know what's going to be the effect of Obamacare and the added costs of that. They don't know what he's going to do tax-wise, Mr. Obama. I think, you know, people will see a more steadier hand and someone that they have consumer confidence or economic confidence in. That will free up a lot of capital that's been sitting in banks and hasn't been spent. That will create a lot of jobs. Cutting back, not getting rid of regulation, as he said, but cutting back and making it, again, easier for the small businessman to operate. You'll see
well,
a lot of
I'm
growth.
Sure we'll be bringing you back in and George will be grilling you next
I
time.
I look forward to
but,
it.
I have to say, Charlie, your wishes are probably my nightmares. But thanks for coming on to The Real Deal anyway. I'm afraid that's all we have time for in this rumbustious show. It will be back same time, same place next week with your usual host, the indefatigable George Galloway. I've been Yvonne Ridley. This has been The Real Deal, and you have been a marvellous audience.